He struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Ah, yes, the snow finally stopped in New York City, and it's absolutely gorgeous here today. It is beautiful because, number one, when the Big Apple is blanketed in white, it's even more gorgeous. Because it's unusual that New York City, you know, we get a lot of snow here. And so when it happens, it's just, I don't know, another reason to be thankful. Hey, it's Mark Farrell. Happy Thursday morning to you. It's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Got a horrible show coming your way. Horrible? Of course it's not horrible, but of course I'm biased. Yes, it's a great show coming your way. You're going to meet Ian Rosenberg. He's legal counsel for ABC News and professor of media law at Brooklyn College, and he has written a terrific book, The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedom. It's just a really, really compelling interview. I actually spoke with Ian yesterday, and we discussed so many different vital aspects of what's happening right now in our nation. How the First Amendment is being challenged by so many outspoken people, extremists, and so much more. We'll get to that in a few minutes. We got to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about shots, immunization, Super Bowl, how a country music star has just derailed his career, and so much more. So, yeah, we got snow. It finally stopped on probably yesterday morning-ish, and we got a dumping of where I live in New Jersey. I live about 45 minutes outside of New York City. We got about 15 inches of snow. Oh, man, I haven't seen 15 inches of snow in quite some time. And we were due. I knew we were going to get pummeled because it's been 2-3 years before we've had, or since rather, we've gotten a good dumping. As a matter of fact, last winter, I did not even start my snowblower. That's how minimal snow we had. I think maybe we had an inch and it got warm and it just dissipated. But it was really kind of refreshing, especially since it started on Sunday. I work at another station, a rock station. So I was working on the air Sunday from 2 to 8. I got to the station at 2 o'clock, and there was nothing. By 8 o'clock, there was like 4 inches on the ground. So it was a slow going ride home, but beautiful. You know what? I like snow for a few different reasons. Number one, it really deadens the sound. Think about that. Wherever you live, well, you could be in a tropical area, but think about sand, how sand deadens the sound. But snow really deadens the sound. And of course, I'm visually impaired, so my hearing is really, really acute. So I love when things are just so quiet. There's no road noise. There's no just atmospheric and or white noise. It's just dead calm. By the way, if you haven't seen that movie, Dead Calm, with Nicole Kidman, came out about 15 years ago. It was great. Anyway, so that's one aspect of snow. I love it. But it's interesting because usually when we get that much snow, it paralyzes a community. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, we'll be immobile for a day or so. But I'm like, we've been immobile for almost a year. Okay, yes, embellishment because things have loosened up and lightened a bit. But you know what I mean with COVID, it really has been quite paralyzing, crippling to a degree. And snow, when you get this amount, this accumulation, has the same effect. And it's kind of nice to see how people come out and help each other. And in my neighborhood, there's a great, great set of neighbors I have across the street from me. They have a huge house because it's two families, a sister and a brother that are both married and have a husband and wife. And they have this huge house. And they're older, but they're very, very active. And they come from a farm in New Guinea. Hard workers. But I know the one guy had some health issues a few years ago, so I always go out and snowblow his driveway. They have three driveways. That's how big this house is. And he kind of yells at me, but I know he appreciates it. And I love being outside. I don't care if it's the wind is blowing sideways. I have goggles on. I have, you know, multiple layers on. I just love it. I just embrace Mother Nature, the wrath of the storm. I don't care. I'm out there just kind of taking it all in. It's just great. Anyway, so I love helping people out, especially when, you know, it's a health consideration. And it's just great to help out family and neighbors, anybody who needs an extra hand. And it's just great fun, you know, be out there and just partaking in snow activities. As a matter of fact, a snowplow didn't come down our street on day one until, oh, I don't know. We had, by the way, we had 2 days worth of snow, maybe more than 2 days, almost 3 days. You know, it was actually this very slow, steady stream of snow. So what I did was I snowblowed my sidewalk, and then I went into the street, and I bit off way more than I could chew, and I cleared a path on the street. Then I went into the garage, took out my lawnmower, my riding mower, and hooked up one of those big dishes for the kids to sit on, and towed them behind me, and they had a blast. So right there, that was entirely worth it, all that snow, just to see them smiling, laughing, falling off, and just, you know, taking it all in. And that's just terrific. And it's just kind of nice to see. It's amazing how much you miss vitamin D. I mean, I think about it, you know, like yesterday I was like, oh man, I really wish the sun was out. And today it's out, and I just feel so, I don't know, effervescent, so alive, right? Doesn't that take a big effect on you? It certainly does for me. Well, this weekend is a huge weekend, not as big as usual because the Super Bowl, like everything else, is kind of reimagined because of COVID. I just heard something this morning. One of the Kansas City Chiefs players was getting a haircut, and I imagine in Kansas City. And he was masked, and his barber was masked too, but halfway through the haircut, the barber was alerted that he tested positive, so he had to walk away. So apparently the center of the Kansas City Chiefs has a half a haircut. And I obviously they finished the haircut, but they took a picture and said, well, this is a job half done. So it was kind of interesting. But it made me think about, why would anyone be around a player? Don't you think the team would actually almost have a barber? Like in this era, you can't take any chances. Chefs, athletic trainers, of course, are always the same. But any tertiary or secondary part of the team, even a simple thing, even if they hadn't had a barber in the past, don't you think that would be something they would consider? You have to make that bubble very small and tight. You can't have the players leaving the training facility and going out and get a haircut wherever they like to get it. Yes, we all like the person who usually cuts our hair. Yes, and it feels good, and it's empowering. It builds your self-confidence when you have a nice haircut. It's like when you buy a nice outfit. But I would have thought that they would have had even just a little minutia aspect like that, I would think they would take care of. Anyway, so tailgating. Imagine this, Super Bowl. For the first time in history, the home team is at their stadium playing a Super Bowl. How cool is that? Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Wow. So tailgating, ready? Tailgating is banned. You cannot tailgate. I would not imagine that word banned would be in the same sentence as tailgating, right? How would you figure? Wow. So players are tested right up until game time, which is understandable. And I hope no one misses out. But it's going to be a great matchup because, obviously, Tom Brady, I mean, is he the GOAT, greatest of all time? Oh, man, I think if he's not, he's Joe Montana. He's had 4 Super Bowl games. Oh, by the way, he did a great Guinness ad. I saw that previewed. He does a very, very humble ad for Guinness that basically is about life and being empowered and unleashing the greatness within you. When you see this, you will have the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. It's him on the field, dressed very simply, kind of a noir look to the commercial, but it's well done. And I really like Joe Montana. He's just a good dude. You can tell that he's very simple and humble and thankful for the opportunity that he had. And I just, you know me, I love positivity because as a motivational speaker, I love to be able to give to people. And when you give people hope and possibility, that is just really, really immensely fulfilling. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to a good game. I think it really is going to be Patrick Mahomes, quarterback for Kansas City. I want them to win because it's very cool that Tom Brady. Now, this is my perspective. I'm not a huge football fan. I like the sport to a certain degree, but we've talked about this in a show in the past. The physicality, the long-term damage to players is just something that the NFL is just beginning to really tackle. But Tom Brady has definitely proved himself. Left New England last year, went to Tampa Bay, and they're in the Super Bowl. So it wasn't all just about coaching, right? So obviously that's the case. So for Patrick Mahomes, though, to come in to a Super Bowl 2 years in a row is fantastic. To being so young, for being so young and so talented and so gifted. But now, if he comes into the Super Bowl 2 years in a row and he beats Tom Brady, now that is a worthy celebration. He will go down in the record books. Everyone will remember this Super Bowl because of minimal fans in the stands and because possibly the greatest of all time was beat basically by a rookie. I mean, he's not that experienced as an NFL quarterback, and he's just tremendous. I love his perspective. I love his attitude. I love the way he carries himself with grace and humbleness and thankfulness. He just seems like he exemplifies what more professional athletes and everyday athletes who do great things should possess. Because, yes, it's great to be at a professional level, especially in the NFL, where, you know, it's really grueling to make it there. And fantastic. Just great for him. I'm excited for a really great game. As a matter of fact, on a totally different note, but related, but I was thinking about making something I haven't made in a long time, potato skins. Potato skins, loading it up with cheddar cheese. And also I told my kids, and they're like, oh, Dad, didn't you mention to me long time ago about getting like nacho chips and putting cheese on there and melting it? Yeah, I did. So it looks like we're in for a total junk food night, which is not a common occasion here in the Farrell family. Morgan Wallen, do you know him? He's a country star. And man, is he at the top of his game. Oh, I'm sorry. He was at the top of his game because it's come out on video that you can hear him. I couldn't see the video too well, that he made a racial slur. So he is falling from grace as we speak. Sirius, satellite radio, iHeart, streaming service, all pulling Wallen's music. I mean, in this day and age, if you think that way, and we know a lot of people do in this country, now more than ever, Trump has exposed so many racists in our nation, so many ageists, so many sexists, you name it. And to think about being above the law, to think about being so popular, having so many albums, so many chart toppers, that you can say something and just get away with it? Oh, man. I remember he was supposed to be on SNL. Oh, probably about 4 months ago or so. And I think maybe the day before, SNL called him up and said, sorry, pal. Thank you, but no thank you, because he was spotted on social media at like a frat party or somewhere on a college campus. Way, 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 way too close to people. So no social distancing. So he's like, nope, I get it. My bad. I shouldn't have been doing that. And then I guess they renegotiated and he came back a few months later and did appear on SNL. And actually, it was kind of a good parody. He parodied himself about not social distancing and, you know, getting all boozed out of his mind and having a good old time. But man, my man, Morgan Wallen, I'm not a big country fan. But, you know, the reality is for me, there's two types of music, good music and not good music. Country music, not my cup of tea. But I appreciate, hey, anybody who has a passion for vibrations of a string, percussion, to use your voice as an instrument, to create something that makes people move, that's incredible. And that's music. And that should be always appreciated. COVID work rituals. You know, I was thinking about this the other day because right now, broadcasting from home, I don't have to do any work rituals. I don't have to wipe down my studio, my microphone, my screen, my mouse, my keypad, everything, my console. But when I'm at the other rock station that I work for, it's funny because when you walk into the station, I'm gloved up, I've got a mask on, I have a hat on. And for the first 10, 15 minutes, all I'm doing is pulling out wipes from my bag and wiping down everything. It's part of the protocol that the station asks everyone to follow. And even if it wasn't, this is something I would do, because you just want to take precautions. So you wipe down the chair, you wipe down the microphone, the stand the microphone's in, the monitors, the console, that means all the faders that you move up and down, the microphone button, the loudness, the volume control in the studio, every possible thing. I mean, there's multiple keyboards, multiple monitors, even the handles of the studio door. There is no kitchen in this radio station anymore. Microwave, refrigerator, coffee, everything's been taken out to minimize the spread of COVID. So how has your world changed, right? Isn't it crazy? I mean, our work days have changed a lot because a lot of us are still working from home. But if you are going in one day a week or multiple days a week, or maybe that hasn't changed, has the interior of your workplace changed? I bet it has, right? Yeah, so we're going to be meeting Ian Rosenberg in just a few minutes and discuss his new book, The Fight for Free Speech. So that's coming up. But yeah, the COVID ritual at work is just kind of mind-boggling, right? And then it's also when you're walking down a hallway, when you see somebody, are you like, how close can you go? Or yeah, you find yourself a little bit too close and you back up a little bit. It's just awkward all around, man. It's just kind of crazy. Little things like, you know, when you go to the gas station, you have to put your window down just a few inches and hand a credit card. It depends, obviously, on everyone's comfort level. You can tell right away, usually, by people's body language, how comfortable they are in a scenario, whether you go to a restaurant. There's one restaurant that we'll go to. I don't consider a drive-up at McDonald's a restaurant, but there's a restaurant that's local that has a big, big dining room that's usually vacant. And we always say to the people, once every 3 or 4 weeks, we'll go there. We'll say, hey, is there any chance we can sneak over there in that room? And they're like, yeah, no problem. So it's great that restaurateurs are being flexible. Restaurant week in New York City, I feel horrible for the restaurants in New York City because it's just wreaking havoc, obliterating businesses. As a matter of fact, the second yoga studio in my hometown just announced that they're closing, the second one. And that's a tough business. And it's also even tougher for the people who are relying on that release to burn off that anxiety, to stave off depression, mental illness, you name it. Because when you practice anything, whether it's cycling, running, weightlifting, yoga, you're doing that for a reason. Obviously, to stay very, very fit and to also just keep sane, man, especially during a time like this where anxiety runs high, just trying to keep your mood up. I mean, in January and in February alone, by the way, thank God we got January behind us, right? Yes, having to deal with one less winter month is a good thing. That much closer to spring and to moving our clocks ahead. Can't wait for that. But yeah, it's just very, it's a tough situation. And I hope you're doing, you know, what we've spoken about in the past few broadcasts about staying healthy, doing whatever you need to do to stay healthy, to get past this COVID era. And getting your shot. I know it's not easy to figure out and to navigate online where to get a shot, how to sign up. Will they allow you to sign up for both shots simultaneously, which I don't think most locations are doing, which is doesn't make any sense to me. Because if you're signing up to get one shot and you need two shots, it should be done. You should be able to sign up right there for both shots. Because this way, it can really just kind of dictate the calendar, availability, et cetera, for both you and the venue platform. The venue that's disseminating the shot. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, and it seems that Biden administration is doing a pretty good job. Man, it's just great to see Biden doing so many different things. He's releasing money for Puerto Rico. Yes, remember Puerto Rico and that horrific hurricane it had when? Years ago? And Trump, I remember Trump saying, oh, can we sell Puerto Rico? Like, I mean, he wanted nothing to do with Puerto Rico. And finally, we're releasing money that's been earmarked from years ago. And it's great, all the executive orders. We don't have time to get into it now, but he's doing some great things. And I want Congress, the GOP, to really put it to Trump during the impeachment trial. Please, let's find this guy guilty so he can never hold a federal office, certainly not run for president again. Please, let's do it. And let's meet Ian Rosenberg. He's the author of The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedoms. And Ian is also legal counsel for ABC News. That's a great gig. And professor of media law at Brooklyn College. Ian Rosenberg, a thrill to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
What a pivotal time it must be for you. I mean, it's a pivotal time for everyone in America. But to have this book land at such a divisive time, such a critical time, and hopefully a time of change, must make you smile and sleep a little bit better at night.
Well, I'm glad that the Fight for Free Speech, my book that I consider a user's guide for Americans to understand our free speech freedoms, is coming out now. Unfortunately, I can't smile too much because, as President Biden says, this is a time when it feels like our democracy is fragile. But hopefully this book will be a guide and a resource for people to not only understand their free speech freedoms, but also to help shore up democracy.
Well, for me, a person who just kind of is a bit of a novice, certainly in terms of admiration of the law, but I just want to hug the law if I could. And how powerful is the phrase for you, right of free speech?
Well, I think it's incredibly powerful, and it represents a truly uniquely American value. The thing that is so interesting to me is that all Americans really value their free speech rights and, you know, really clamor to speak and be heard, but actually very few understand the extent and limits of their rights. And I think that's understandable because there hasn't really been a general interest book for non-lawyers in a decade or more to have come out. And my day job working at ABC News and teaching media law students at Brooklyn College has meant that I've spent my whole career basically explaining free speech issues to smart people who aren't lawyers. And that's exactly what this book is. It's a way in which I try and talk about contemporary free speech controversies and then the story behind the key First Amendment case that went to the Supreme Court that answers those questions, and to do it in a way that's understandable, entertaining, and simple. I believe strongly that a wisdom can be condensed, but it doesn't need to be dumbed down. So that's the goal of this book, The Fight for Free Speech.
And on that note, Ian Rosenberg, I read somewhere in the multitude of documents I received on all your incredible information that you gave an analogy about the tapestry of the law and how it is complex, but how it can be distilled down. And you gave the analogy of you can buy a carpet at IKEA. You know, it's not a grand tapestry, but it covers what you need and it does the job.
Yes, that's something I talk about in my introduction. In law school, the cliche advice that you get as usually a first-year law student is that the law is like a seamless web or this tapestry that you can only begin to comprehend when you know every thread, because it all weaves together in this perfectly coherent way. So I reject that analogy. I think it's probably not entirely true. Things don't weave together perfectly. But more importantly, I think that's another one of these barriers that prevents people from understanding free speech rights that they have, is that they feel like, well, I'm not going to be able to go to law school. I don't have time to take a whole course on the First Amendment.
And how can you possibly remember all that material?
Right. And it's impossible even for lawyers.
Sure.
And that's why people specialize. But so what I do say that this book is like a rug from IKEA. It may not be a perfectly beautifully woven, but it covers all you need to know. It's cheaper and it gets to you really quickly.
You know, I could ask you the genesis of this book, but I think it's probably apparent because you have a love for the law. But how did you feel on January 6th? I'm sure like most Americans, you were horrified. You must have been, wow. Now more than ever, Americans desire to be heard, obviously, whether you agree with someone's vernacular and how they're actually articulating it, whatever digital platform or in person. But now more than ever, the clarity needs to be underscored about what the First Amendment is about.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And I think that there are some key issues that this book hopefully clears up as a starting point for what is protected by the First Amendment and our free speech rights and what is not. One very, very simple area is that, violence and trespass are not protected by the First Amendment, even if it comes in the course of what may have been a protected protest. There is absolutely, that is clear cut, and the violence of the Capitol is in no way.
I don't know if you're right about that, Ian. You know, a lot of people would disagree with you.
I would respectfully argue that they are wrong.
I'm on your side.
Yeah, no, but I think that, the limit is important. You know, when I wrote the first chapter of my book, which is on the Abrams case, which involves back in World War One, some anarchist immigrants were against World War One and opposed the draft, and they were actually convicted and put in jail for speaking out against the government. And their conviction was based on advocacy of illegal action. Mm-hmm. You know, they were saying that they should stop the draft. And that case created, they actually stayed in jail, but the dissent from Justice Holmes introduced the marketplace of ideas concept, revitalized First Amendment law, basically created our modern notions of First Amendment law, and led to what's called the Brandenburg test, which is the incitement test, when speech advocating illegal action is no longer protected. And in short, that is when the speech is intended to and may reasonably cause direct violence. So, you know, there is a limit to when our speech is no longer protected. And certainly the events at the Capitol came frighteningly close, if not close enough, to no longer be protected.
I want to address quickly the 10 key free press rights that you cover in the book. Right to advocate for illegal action, unless it likely causes imminent harm. Right not to speak, right not to speak, right to criticize public figures and media and make mistakes, right not to disrupt a protest in school, right to offend, right to publish without being stopped, no right to curse on broadcast television and radio. I kind of like that one. Right to parody, right to expose thoughts we hate, right to use social media as a public forum. Now, those are 10 vital points. I'm going to ask you to speak about one or three of them, if you like, Ian.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the right. I already spoke a little bit about the right to advocate for illegal action mm-hmm. up to a certain point. But let's talk about the right to speak, because this each chapter of my book starts with, as I was saying, a contemporary controversy. So I begin the second chapter talking about Colin Kaepernick's Take a Knee protests. And, you know, what he was really seeking to do was to not speak the message of the national anthem or to not participate in it fully with the NFL. And there are two, you know, misconceptions about that right that I would like to talk about.
Please.
One is that we, you know, we have to remember that the First Amendment only applies to the government. The text says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. That applies now to the states and the federal governments and other government actors, but it doesn't apply to private companies. So you don't really have free speech rights with private employers. So the NFL can do what they like to people who speak a message they don't agree with. However, that's not where I think we should end the discussion, and I don't in my book, because one, we're talking about First Amendment values, and two, we are talking about people who may want to take a knee who don't have private employers, and that's often students at public universities or even at public high schools. Those organizations are the equivalent of government actors, and those students have a right not to have the government or the state actor compel them to speak a message they don't agree with. And this dates back to a case that I traced the fascinating story of, which is two sisters, Barnett sisters, who elementary school students who during World War II as Jehovah Witnesses no longer wanted to pledge allegiance to the flag because they felt it was a form of idolatry that interfered with their religious principles. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court held that they had a right not to speak, that the government couldn't compel them to say a message that they didn't agree with. Mm. And I think that recognizing that the government can't force us to say things that we don't like is a really crucial and very little understood component of our free speech rights today.
Very, very compelling points, especially with the NFL. And one more added footnote to that is majority of Americans, I think, still don't understand the real issue of why Colin does that.
Well, I think what's so interesting is I agree with you. And I think what's so interesting is how, you know, public perception has really changed on that issue to some degree, particularly among white people, after the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter protests in connection with the death of George Floyd. You know, the NFL commissioner has quasi apologized for the NFL's actions toward Kaepernick, although as Howard Bryant, the very astute ESPN reporter has written that, you know, until the NFL apologizes directly to Kaepernick, much of those statements, I think, ring really hollow today.
Absolutely. And I think it underscores, obviously, the long, outdated perspective and actions of NFL. I mean, Roger Goodell is obviously known for not doing the right thing. He's a bargainer. He's a negotiator. As a lawyer, you can probably appreciate that. But in terms of being a person, a public figure, and doing the right thing, he certainly has been slow to operate on that direction. How about a right to offend?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the contemporary issues that I talk about is involves Julie Briskman, who her name isn't that famous, but her actions were. She was the woman who was on her bike when President Trump's motorcade was driving to golf course or from a golf course. And she flipped her middle finger off at his motorcade, not knowing that there was an AP photographer in the motorcade as well, took her picture.
Love it.
And she, you know, I think Stephen Colbert called it the finger that waved across the country. and so, you know, she was fired from her job. Once again, private employers can do what they like. But I talk about that there is a right to offend, and that's inherent in our free speech rights. And this dates back to a case where a man wore a jacket during the Vietnam War in a California a courtroom that said F the draft. I won't say it out in full, although because, you know, there isn't a right to curse on broadcast television and radio. But so he had this jacket that said F the draft, and the court held that you have a right to offend, and that, in a beautiful phrase, one man's vulgarity is another man's lyric. And so sometimes the emotive expression of what is being said is just as important as the actual message. So how you say it can be as protected as what you want to say. And you know, the Julie Briskman story has a great twist, and a lot of these stories that I tell in the book, I think, you know, if they weren't true, it would seem like a Hollywood ending. But she did lose her job, but she then ran for office and was elected to local office.
Has a great ending. Now, does she have a good basis for a suit, Ian?
Well, she had a couple different non-First Amendment claims, but she lost her suit. And again, that goes back to the fact that we really have almost no free speech rights in connection with private employers.
Interesting. Even though she wasn't on duty in her job, she was a private citizen at the moment, just exercising freely outside.
Right. And one of the things I try and create space for in this book is that there are many things that you don't have a legal right for that we don't have to agree with. Now, we can feel that what this company did was wrong. We can say that it seems like there's some facts that make it seem like there was a double standard being applied to her and other people's speech. But that's not a First Amendment issue. Another one of the goals I have for this book is that people shouldn't stop advocating for the type of free speech values they believe in just because it might not be protected by the First Amendment.
Well, I think your dog agrees.
It's
live radio. What are you going to do? How would the circumstances worked in her favor if you could have changed any variables about what she did?
Well, it would have been different if she had worked for a public entity, if she had been a government employee. But even government employees have more limited speech rights than we do in terms of individual citizens being protected from the government. That is really at the crux of what our First Amendment rights, protecting the government from interfering with the public discourse.
Ian Rosenberg serves as legal counsel for ABC News and teaches media law at Brooklyn College and has over 20 years of experience as a media lawyer. His new book is called The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedoms. Do me a favor. What does the Constitution in layman's terms mean to you, and how vital is it for you? I mean, is this something that you obviously embrace, and this is a career that you've chosen, and throughout the years, is it something that you've become to love even more, or something that you've also see a need of a lot of work moving into the 21st century has a lot of holes in it?
Well, you know, I feel all of those things. I certainly embrace our free speech rights, and it is deeply meaningful for me. It is not just my day job, but one of the things I'd like to take an opportunity to say is that I hope this book not only gives people a better understanding of their free speech rights, but I hope it gives a more accurate understanding of our free press rights and how crucial they are for our democracy to continue to exist as we know it. I think the last 4 years have shown, as legendary First Amendment attorney Floyd Abrams puts it, that mm-hmm. the First Amendment is under sustained attack. And much of that attack came from an administration in which the media was described as the enemy of the people, the mainstream media. And I work for the mainstream media, so I'm certainly not objective, but I can say from personal experience that when Trump and other people on the right think that the media can, you know, lie and get away with it, that nothing is further from the truth. First of all, my whole job is working with the media to make sure that we're accurate. But also, once again, there's a key case that explains that, and it dates back to the civil rights movement. It's called Sullivan, and it involved civil rights leaders, including Dr. King, who had taken out an ad to defend Dr. King and his actions in the South, were sued by a Southern government official who claimed that there were minor inaccuracies in the ad, and therefore he should win a libel verdict. And he did, all the way up through his state court. And the Supreme Court created the actual malice standard that we have today, which is very misunderstood, but basically says that you can't knowingly lie or turn a blind eye to the truth and be protected. And I think that's the right balance to strike. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that there is the media can say whatever they want and it doesn't matter, as Trump said repeatedly inaccurately. It means that you can criticize public officials, that the civil rights coverage was enabled to continue from the New York Times and other papers in the South or wherever their opinions might, their reporting might not be well received, but it does not give them a blank check. And so I do feel deeply that a free press is vital to our democracy, is doing a really important job, and most of the time is doing the right thing. And I think this book, The Fight for Free Speech, will give people a better understanding also of the fight for a free press.
As a lawyer, Ian, as a professor of law, as a American citizen, do you cringe, or certainly do you appreciate the fact that people, certainly more in the last, I'd say 10 or 15 years, are taking to the streets more in America than ever and voicing their opinions?
Oh, I revel in that.
I love it. It's great, isn't it?
Yes.
I've always said we're so far behind Europe. Europe has been doing this, you know, for centuries. And why? Because this is what it's all about. Change. You have to get the voice out there, not just on social media.
That's right. In my book, I quote Gloria Steinem at the Women's March, saying that sometimes you have to paraphrase her, that sometimes you have to put your body on the street to show up for your convictions. And I think, you know, protecting dissent is at the end of my book, I talk about most of the book is very descriptive and talking about our rights. But in the afterword, I have a few maxims of what I believe in. And I hope maybe some other people will start to believe in further. And one of them is how vital it is that we protect dissent. Even dissenting views that people may disagree with, it's so important to be able to participate in speech in that way, to advocate for what you believe in, to advocate for change. And that's another thing that I hope comes out of this book, is that people will start looking at free speech as a grassroots activity. I talk about Supreme Court cases because they're the clearest distillation of what mm-hmm. the law is today. But really, free speech happens on the ground every day. It happens in our schools, in our churches, in our mosques, in our synagogues, at community board meetings, at town councils. And now reading this book, I think people will be armed with the knowledge they need to feel confident about their free speech rights and for advocating for change, whether that's joining a protest or just tweeting about it on social media.
Absolutely. I mean, this conversation alone is an example.
Thank you. Yes, I agree completely.
So I don't want to put you on the spot too much, Ian, but what is your perspective on finding former President Trump guilty of inciting a riot? Do you think there's enough credible evidence?
Well, you know, that's a criminal, it's a constitutional matter, but not the constitutional matter that's my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. But as I was talking before about incitement, it has come out that one of Trump's lawyers' defense has been this claim that somehow the First Amendment protects him from impeachment, and that's just very misleading. First of all, it's not the applicable area of law, and more importantly, as I described, that there are limits to advocacy for illegal action, and he's come very close, if not over that line.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see. Let's talk about, obviously, the digital platform and freedom of speech in terms of, speaking of Trump, platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and other platforms ceasing his accounts. Do you find that this is a violation or support of the First Amendment?
There is no First Amendment violation for Twitter or any other social media platform deplatforming Trump. And one of the things I do try and do with the book is not be as my father was an economist and used to talk about how people always hate, they wanted a one-handed economist, somebody who would not say on the one hand this, on the other hand that. So I'm trying to be a one-handed media lawyer and say, yes, Twitter and these social platforms absolutely have a right to deplatform Trump. And let me explain why. You know, it's important to remember that all social media platforms are private entities. And we've been talking about that distinction. And so they don't have to abide by the First Amendment. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, they're not government actors. They can restrict people's speech all they want. They can kick people off their platforms, including the President of the United States. They can restrict speech based on its message, or they could refuse ads from whomever they chose. And these choices are editorial decisions that reflect the free speech rights of the social media companies themselves. So while this may raise its own host of political or social concerns, any decision like this is in no way going to be found by courts to be an unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment. There's a clear answer here. Government actors have to follow the First Amendment, but private companies and private individuals, including social media companies, do not.
Well, you know, I have to say it's been a few weeks now. I'm still doing a jig that he was deplatformed because, I mean, just to strip away someone's voice like that on that level obviously did the nation a lot of, you know, good. Obviously, there's a lot of people would fight that, but anyway, that's my personal opinion. But in terms of organizations like Black Lives Matter, Proud Boys, are there organizations and or private citizens that you see, whether you agree or not with their content, that you applaud on what they say and how they're saying it?
Well, I certainly applaud the Black Lives Matter movement and felt very strongly about participating in some of the marches with my family. Sure. And I was proud to be able to do so even during the midst of COVID, and was also really proud of the New Yorkers who I marched with, who, you know, you'd see a sea of people, but everyone was really looking out for each other, really keeping their distance as much as possible, wearing masks, really doing all the right things in terms of keeping safe during the protests. But I also think that it's important that we remember that short of engaging in violence or trespass or other things that are not protected by the First Amendment, that it's it's a real First Amendment value to let people express their First Amendment speech rights how they choose. There's a lot of talk often about, well, I might agree with what you're saying, but I don't think you should take a knee, or I don't think you should say Black Lives Matter. I think you should say All Lives Matter. And I think that hopefully this book will give people a greater context of how, one, you know, opinions change over time, and what seemed radical at one point, you know, very quickly can become a mainstream. But more importantly, will give people an appreciation that, you know, at the core of our First Amendment values is for the right to people. Is the right for people to express their message, to speak their truth, how they see fit, whether it's saying F the draft, you know, showing the finger to the president, or taking a knee. It's the speaker who should be thinking about, should have the right to control their message, as long as it causes no physical harm to other people, not society, and certainly not the government.
Well said, Ian. Ian, it must warm your heart when you see the news daily about what's happening in Russia in terms of people, the upheaval, and realizing what Putin is doing, and they're storming the streets and realizing, wow, this is certainly not right.
It is inspiring, and it's so terrifying at the same time.
True.
I mean, you see journalists being, you know, arrested, just, you know, carte blanche, and they really have no rights. And so as you know, as fragile as our democracy, as flawed in some ways as the application is sometimes of what should be clear free speech principles in America, of course we should not take for granted the right to be able to criticize the government, as I talk about in the book, the right for a free press to criticize government officials, which was at the heart of the Sullivan decision, and the right to speak out against our leaders. You know, much as President Trump wanted to restrict that in every way possible, from libel to lashing out at Saturday Night Live to trying to stop Stormy Daniels and others for speaking. We have these rights, and it's important to remember the hard-fought battles that led to shoring up these rights to even greater degree. And it's heartening to remember what we have, and worrisome to see what's happening.
It's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out.
Yeah.
Ian Rosenberg, you were an Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker. What was the film?
It's called Finishing Heaven. It was directed by Mark Mann, and it was about a man. It was on HBO, and it was about a couple who in the 70s had been lovers and were involved in the Warhol sort of film scene, and it put together this beautifully shot movie that didn't have a lot of plot and never finished. And then 30 years later, they get back together to try and have a new shot at fame, to reunite to finish the movie.
Wow. So this is the right side of your brain in action.
That's right. Well, you know, I really love nonfiction storytelling. I love it at my day job when I get to watch the top people at ABC News tell stories. I like making documentary films. Now I've gotten to experience telling stories in the fight for free speech. And I hope that I bring some of that excitement that comes with good filmmaking to this book. The stories behind our rights, I think, are as fascinating
Absolutely.
And compelling as the rights themselves.
Yeah, I had an opportunity a few years ago, Ian, to be involved with some litigation. And I was intrigued by, because my world is very creative, and I found that the black and white aspect of law, and of course, you know, that's ambiguous in its interpretation, but I found it amazing in terms of when you have a set of guidelines to find out how and which direction, and would it be effective or not if a law would apply, whether there was precedence, and how it can be presented to make your case or not. And I just found it more intriguing. I've always been a fan of the law, respectful of the law, but it was not until then that I really kind of got into the trenches that I realized, wow, this is such a powerful system we have.
I absolutely agree. And when it works, you know, there are grave miscarriages of justice in our system, particularly in the criminal law area, which is not my area. But when it works, it's a beautiful thing. And one of the things that I try and convey is that at its heart, it's really all about stories. You know, the stories of people fighting for their free speech rights are about, like, this is what I want to say. You know, I'm Mary Beth Tinker. I'm a middle school student in Des Moines. During the Vietnam War, I'm going to wear a black armband. I don't care if my school district is going to try and stop me from doing that. I'm going to protest the Vietnam War. That story tells us so much, not only about who these people are, but about about our rights. And then the Supreme Court cases themselves are really the way the justices tell us about the story of America. Chapters in my book unfold with each case. The controversies are all pulled from today, but each case moves chronologically. So we get a sense of what you were referring to, of the way precedent, each case builds over time and leads to the next case and to the next development of our rights. So there can be a real messy beauty to the evolving nature of our liberty as it plays out in the courts.
Ian Rosenberg, I'm sure I know the answer to this, but I want to put it out there to you. How beneficial would it be for all Americans? How much would it behoove them to have a better understanding of the law, especially the First Amendment?
Well, I think it's vital to protecting our democracy. I think it's vital to empowering our individuals to be able to speak their messages. Mm. I also think it's vital to being able to make change. One of the things that I hope to do in this book is that I don't want the conversation to end with the First Amendment isn't involved here. You know, sometimes I talk about when I talked about the deplatforming of Trump, I say, you know, the First Amendment isn't implicated. These social media companies can do what they want to Trump. I don't want that to be the end of the conversation about social media. There are a lot of problems with social media, and there are a lot of ways in which the social media companies need to be held accountable to do better, particularly in terms of transparency regarding their policies. We should advocate and maybe in some cases even take to the streets to bring about change for the policies that we don't agree with, but we have to begin that process by knowing what we're advocating for and what our rights come into play. So I hope that the conversation continues. I hope that this education, fun education in one book enables people to sometimes have the First Amendment knowing it has their back and sometimes saying, well, that's not a problem that the First Amendment can solve. I'm going to have to solve it some other way.
Mm, well said. And I also think as a parent, I think it would be a vital form of information to share just as the world changes critically in the next 5-10 years. I mean, it's radically changing in the past 5 years. I think it'd be a vital piece of information to share.
Thank you. Yes. And, you know, this book for me in part came out of the desire to write this book and in part came out after the tragic shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. I was talking to my kids at the dinner table who were ages 12 and 10 at the time. And they were very serious about what would happen if they left school during the day to join the national school walkout protests. You know, could they be punished? What were their rights? And I think Americans of all ages are really confronted with a barrage of free speech questions. Students at the forefront, I talk about our student speech rights in the Tinker case, the Black Armband case I was referring to a moment ago. The future of free speech, it lies both with social media and with our students and children who are so adept and comfortable in that forum. So yes, I think this is great and fun dinner table conversation. And it's also a really accessible book for high school students, and I would welcome their thoughts.
Great parenting, Ian. Sounds like the apples haven't fallen far because your kids are asking vital questions at a young age, and that's what we want. We want them to have wide open eyes to second guess everything. Why can't we do this? And why should we do it this way?
Well, that's absolutely. I mean, I have very inspiring, amazing children, great, of course. But I do think that dissent is patriotic, mm-hmm. Whether it comes from your kids sometimes asking tough questions, or whether we're asking tough questions of our elected officials. But I think that students especially often want to know, like, what are my rights? Because they feel treated as second class citizens often in our society. And the Supreme Court beautifully said is that your right to free speech does not disappear as you enter the schoolhouse gates. So I think there's a lot of inspiring messages in this.
And what a great students. Great point to end right there. The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedoms. I believe that's available on NYU Press, Ian.
It is, and wherever books are sold, hopefully from your wonderful independent bookstore.
And do you have a website, Ian?
I do. It's thefightforfreespeech.com. Read all about the book, and more resources are there.
Ian Rosenberg, thank you so much for this incredible, incredible, enlightening look at the First Amendment and just the different aspects of it, the different components, how it affects our everyday life and how it can change our lives, certainly.
Thank you. It's been a great conversation.
And this is very cool. You can join Ian and many other people for a book launch. The conversation continues next week for the kickoff virtual talk for the Fight for Free Speech. It's going to be at New York City independent bookstore, Shakespeare and Company. And I will post a link on the Insight page so you can join and attend this virtual launch, which is going to be a great conversation. Compelling topic, of course, the Fight for Free Speech book launch event virtual talk. Unfortunately, our time is up, my friends. Thank you so much for spending a part of your Thursday with me. Always welcome your feedback, questions at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Gary Null is next. Thanks to all the great staff at the Progressive Radio Network. And thanks to you. Keep living and keep laughing.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kids' school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.